April 2020, just as the global pandemic was kicking off, Lawrence and I started recording our weekly Friday Firesides. These are conversations broadcast live over the Crowdcast platform and joined by people all over the world who listen in and share their thoughts with us via the chat. We started these live recordings as an opportunity to keep in touch with our members, as well as process what it meant to run a business during a pandemic. Since then, we've broadcast nearly every single Friday and built up a library of over 100 episodes. We cover a range of different topics, from money to meaning, pricing to purpose, vision to vulnerability, entrepreneurship to empathy, and product design to life design. This is our perspective of what it means to do business from the inside out, as well as the outside in. If you're a business hippie just like us, then you'll definitely find something of value here. We hope that these conversations inspire and motivate you to do work and build businesses that create meaningful change without burning out. Because like us, you're just wanting to make money, do good, and be happy. For those listeners who haven't come across you, Ben, maybe just a little intro to yourself and the work you do.
Yeah, well, thank you. So for sure, some of the work that I do is around coaching and working with other people who, like myself, have kind of spent a long time on a entrepreneurial journey. Like my work for money work has traditionally always been kind of running businesses. And so I've run a few businesses over the last now kind of nearly 30 years. And so that's a lot of the work that I do. The kind of work for money work is working with people who are on a sort of similar journey to that. But really, I think what I'm kind of also interested in is how sort of time is not just spent in work for money, and how my sort of time is divided up over the course of a day. So there is other time, because I'm kind of very interested in sort of teaching. I'm interested in talking. I'm interested in experimenting with podcasts, both with you and other podcasts too. And so kind of just, and also the kind of process of learning. I think a lot of the, how I like to spend my time is learning, and then try to package up that learning and then offer it to other people via all different means. Like I said, might be coaching, might be talking, might be standing in a field, wherever it may be. So the what I do is a little bit dependent on who is asking and when they're asking.
I love the fluid nature of your being in business. Awesome. Thank you, Ben. So this conversation has been inspired by your talk at Summer Camp. It's also for us an opportunity just to give people a window into what happens at Summer Camp. Mm. I think talking a bit to what you were saying there is kind of hard to just like nail down sort of the what it is that you do, and sometimes it's hard for us to nail down what it is that Summer Camp does for people. I think one element of it, I think I like what you captured, is to share learnings, not from the perspective of a kind of pedagogical approach, right? Lessons, do this, A, B, and C, but more from a kind of a story-based approach, experiences, so that these are lessons that connect, not just educate. And so this idea that we're all on a journey of change, like we like to talk about this on our Vision 2020 program, but through that process, these are things that there are lessons people can teach us, but there's experiences that we just have to go through ourselves, otherwise we just won't know what it means for us and how to tackle it. So I think the common thread for people to understand here, there's a common thread between all of us. We've all run agencies, and we've all experienced what that has meant for us in terms of our energy and our needs, and we can empathize with the struggle that can have, and we've had a need to get out of that space for whatever reason. And so we're going to talk to this idea of ending things and starting new things, I think leaning on that experience. But I think to begin with, maybe to start, Ben, just to, however you want to summarize some of the topics that you had in your talk, to give catch people up so that they know where some of these ideas came from for you, we can then move forward and just share some of our stories around this.
Yeah. And I guess in a way, some of the context for the talk was kind of going, so I think, well, it was that Summer Camp was in September. I think actually kind of going back actually, so much for that, in March time, remember sort of not, you sort of started Ideas.
Ideas Cafe.
I was about to say Ideas Factory, but I sort of joined you at one of those, and we were talking about the sort of money pricing stuff. And as part of that was then sort of standing up in front of an audience. And I kind of remembered after that. So that was the first time I stood in front of any audience, of course, for like more than 2 years. Because there was that sort of small matter of COVID, which came along over the last couple of years. And so there was, you know, we were not sort of standing in groups, in a sort of, you know, together in real life. And just even giving that kind of little talk, I kind of sort of reminded me that actually I do enjoy that sort of, in some ways, I also find it quite very nerve-wracking. Bit of a kind of double-edged sword there, but quite enjoy standing in front of an audience, standing with, being amongst the group, essentially. I was kind of reminded that actually the last time I had done that was in January 2020, so just before the kind of world came to pause for a couple of years. And I was giving a talk to a group of students in Dublin on this kind of idea, on the importance of ending things as a creative stimulus to creating new things. And so I'd given that talk a couple of years before, and then a sort of short while before we were all sort of together in that room in March where we were doing Ideas Cafe, it was actually, and I don't know if she is on the call now, but I mentioned to her where at some camp. I remember Marianne, who's part of your community, and reading on one of the kind of WhatsApp, on one of the channels, Marianne was talking about wanting to make this kind of change in her work. And she had decided that she needed to really end all of the other kind of work that she'd been doing in order to kind of create the space for this kind of new work to kind of flourish, for this new work to develop. So in reading that from kind of Marianne, reminding myself of the talk that I'd also given, which was part of my own journey about how to go through this period of change and the importance, the need to kind of end things in order to kind of create the stimulus, in order to create the space or something new. I think actually it kind of felt to me like this would be a kind of a version of the talk that I've given in Dublin would be very kind of helpful to people, you know, who would be, you know, at summer camp, those people in that community, or people like all of us who are sort of striving to do something more, are kind of inclined to do something more, trying to kind of birth something new in some form. And I kind of really sort of, you know, what Marianne saying, kind of calling that out, saying that she was trying to end, you know, kind of really draw a line to this one whole sort of stream of her work to create the space for something new, kind of really tallied with my own experience. And also, so I think it's kind of all of that kind of bubbling up, the kind of post-COVID world coming out of that, remembering the kind of my own sort of talks that I've been giving around the importance of ending to creating new, people then kind of mentioning it in and around the community, kind of felt like a kind of topic which I wanted to kind of revisit and explore some more. When I was running my last company, I knew in my heart actually that I didn't want to be doing that for a long time. A long, 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 long time, many, many years. In fact, there was a point at which we had been, I'd been running it for, at that point, probably like 7 years or so. It was a good number of years. And we had just won a project, which was kind of equal in sort of value, in kind of financial terms, the same size as our previous 5 years turnover. So we'd just won this absolutely kind of huge project. And actually, and I remember just after we won and starting the process of kind of doing the planning for actually how we were going to deliver this thing. I remember kind of hearing, feeling, knowing a voice then saying, actually, your work here is done. Because a lot of what had motivated me up to that point, you know, was I was, you know, very competitive. I was motivated by kind of the company succeeding, the company doing well, and a lot of the kind of measures that came with that. That had been a big part of the kind of motivation. And that motivation, you know, in time, of course, gets very kind of grinding. It can get very tiring. And at that point at which we won that, there was definitely a voice, which I definitely noted, but really chose to ignore, which said, actually, I think your work here is done. Now, it was really a fully 10 years before I actually then left the company. From that point on, I sort of knew that my work was done, but I was very reluctant to engage with that idea. And I think I was very reluctant to engage with that idea for kind of many reasons, you know, some which are kind of, you know, the obvious ones, which are, you know, I'd spent all of the time building that company. So I really identified with being the managing director of that company. I really identified with the kind of measures of success that came with that company. I really identified with the security, financial security that came with that company and all of the sort of trappings of those things that sort of came. Because by many sort of measures, we were running a successful company. So the kind of identifying with that, the need for that, the kind of feeling of safety and security and story that was kind of really wrapped up in that, meant it was quite hard to kind of to be able to kind of let go of that. It was hard to kind of create a space for it. And I think one of the other things was that it was hard also to really know what was on the other side. You know, if I was not identified around those things, if they were not how I sort of defined who I was and what I did, then kind of in a way, who was I and what do I do? And the kind of not knowing those things is actually a really destabilizing thing. So it's really hard. I think from my own, obviously only answer from my own experience, why is it so hard? It was so hard for me because I really identified with everything that kind of represented. And then coming to the question about why it was necessary, in a sense, you know, that point around, well, if I'm not identified with that, if I'm not defining myself by that, then what am I identifying with? What am I defined by? And in a way, I also couldn't ever actually get close to answering those questions while I was still wearing the old clothes, if you like. And so for me, it was needing to go through this sort of, you know, through this kind of transition, through this sort of change point where, in a sense, the clothes were taken off me so that I would have no choice but to kind of grow into or understand what, you know, what was on the other side of nakedness.
Thank you very much for that image, Ben. Like, oh, well, the thing that struck me when you first started talking is, like you said, 7 years. It's like, oh, I knew after 7 years my job had been done. And I started thinking, like, actually, we officially started our agency in 2008, and we officially closed it more or less in 2015.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no, I believe there's a 7-year itch. I thought there's mm-hmm. 4 years. Well, 7-year cycles. Mm-hmm. Whether you close, but there's renewal. I just met so many people, founders, who get to a point after around that time.
So that was a curious thing. And then this point of like, I've achieved or I've done what I needed to do, or there was like this goal aspect to it. Like, okay, I came here to do this. That's done. Okay, what next? Kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is, like with us, it wasn't like we decided to end something to start to create space to start something new. It was only when, like, when you talk to like an identity or a direction that I felt was much clearer, so that it became more of a pull than a push. So I don't think I would have ever got to a point with the agency where I was happy to end it without a clear idea of what we were moving towards. And that belief got stronger, that my body, you know, my kind of, like you say, talking about your heart, your gut, that became stronger. But there was a gut instinct at the start when we first started talking about the Happy Startup School. Or even before that, I think me and Carlos talking about creating a new arm to the Spook Studio. So it was going to be like a Spook School. It was going to be a training arm. There was a need. I think we both had to learn more, to have more inspiration, to inspire others as well. So there was definitely evolving needs. I think that's probably where that came from, was, like you said, maybe the spark at the start of something had changed into just delivery, had changed into a different type of work, which I got to the point where I just wasn't feeling as creative anymore. And my creativity was getting constrained by the projects we were working on. You know, there was loads of creativity at the beginning. We were working with clients, helping them release their ideas. But then over time, it was just about fixing things and, you know, tweaking things rather than making big shifts in the products we were creating. So yeah, I personally definitely had a need to just keep new energy coming into the business, and that eventually evolved into Happy Startup School. But I think even without that, I think we both felt like, well, we're at this crossroads really of, do we grow our agency and become those guys and grow the team and get a bigger office and bigger clients and take that route, or do we take a sideways turn and try something different, whether that ends up becoming our main thing or whether it's just a fun side hustle that just keeps us interested and the money's over here. And so that's the bit I remember, was this, luckily both of us being interested in the same things and having the same sorts of questions, I think, in terms of the books we were reading and the kinds of companies or organizations that inspired us. I remember having those conversations together around that time, but yeah, at the start, I don't think there was any question of closing the agency, because the thing for me was really about how that impacts other people, not just the team, but our clients, our families. We had young kids at the time. So there was a lot of other stakeholders involved in any decision we made, which I think is a big reason why anyone is scared of making changes. It's easy when it's just you, but it's a lot harder when you have to explain that and tell stories about what you're doing and why. And I think storytelling is such a big part of that for me, because I've worked with lots of people who they almost need a new story to tell before they can have some ending to the current story that they're living in.
My experience at the agency at the time is I was very much client facing, and to a certain level, firefighting a lot, you know, challenges with products we were building, and we're in like a number of mature products and new products at the same time. And when you're in that space, there's not a lot of energy for creativity or thinking about something new when you're in the nearly fight or flight place. And I didn't recognize it at the time. I didn't know that that was the case. I just didn't know anything better, really. It was a case of just having fallen into a business model. And so for me, it was important. While I didn't know at the time what the Happy Startup School was going to be, I did know I couldn't run the agency on my own. I knew that running two organizations, or even just putting your mind to two initiatives at the same time, was just overwhelming, given also the amount of work required just for the agency work. And so something had to stop in order to be able to focus, or even to even dream or consider. And so a difficult but important part of it, or reason, was like just to be able to think and act in a new way. To be able to do that, I had to sort of stop doing the old ways, which is, like Lawrence is saying, hard, because the old ways were familiar, if still not particularly comfortable, while the new ways was uncomfortable, but it felt, I'm going to say, slightly familiar in terms of the feel of it, in terms of actually, this feels a bit more like home rather than the other way.
One thing I'd add to that, for me, there was something about commitment as well. So actively closing the agency and actively committing to this, for me, was a massive just mindset shift, because it was, we're not just playing here. We're actually, this is real. This is professional. We're stepping up. And so we'll make it work. We'll have to make it work. And so it became much more of a focus, much more exciting, really, because it was less, are we doing this? Are we not doing it? Are we doing that? Are we not doing that? So then that decision suddenly became easier. Once we made the decision, it was so much easier and much less scary than thinking about making the decision, if that makes sense. So it's the fear of making a decision that was more scary, I believe. Because once you make a decision, you commit, then you just work out what you need to do next. And that becomes a set of steps. And it is also about that story as well, of like, and explaining why are we doing this?
Just to add on to that whole, the theme of commitment, I don't think I was actually committed to the agency. I didn't feel that sense of commitment to the agency, which made it possible to stop. But there could have been a different scenario where I could have continued in that space, even though I wasn't committed to it. And I think that's the dangerous part, to continue something, even though you, and that's much what I was hearing from you, Ben, about still staying around, is like, not sure if I'm actually committed to this, but I'm going to stay here.
Well, to Joel's point, I like this idea of whilst you're in your heart, you know, you had those feelings that I'm not, this isn't maybe not my future, but were you actually ready, was actually 10 years later when you were ready.
Yeah. And I think for sure, in some form, that has to be the case, doesn't it? That you're ultimately going to do it when you are ready. And to all, I like what you're saying around the commitment. I think that is a huge, you know, the point at which we kind of are ready to actually commit, the point at which we're really ready to step in, is when things can actually flow. The other thing which has come into my mind as you were talking is that I remember probably sort of around the sort of time when I was actually leaving, I remember I was working with a meditation teacher, and it's obviously like in, meditation, so there's lots of talk around letting go, with ideas of letting go. And I remember talking to my meditation teacher sort of probably around this sort of time of year. And I remember saying to him, oh, next year, my intention is really to focus on letting go. And I remember him sort of saying, well, before you can let go, you need to know what you're holding on to. And actually, the focus is, what are you actually holding on to, rather than this idea of, no, I'm letting go, I'm letting go, I'm letting go, I'm letting go. It's like, no, actually, what are you holding on to? What am I holding on to? What are those stories that I'm holding on to? What are those ideas that I'm holding on to? All that sort of, and actually, it's in that, which was really where I was kind of entangled with my company, actually, was in the thing that I was actually just was really kind of over holding on to. I was holding on to too tight. And in a way, I think the thing that feels for me that, you know, part of the reason for myself why it was, you know, so hard, kind of the ending things is hard, is that it does come back to something that is going on in, you know, in your mind, in your kind of heart, in your mind. It's like, I'm holding on to something, you know, whether it's by fear, whether it's for security, whatever it might be. And it's that holding on where the kind of entangling happens. And so until I was kind of clearer, I guess, about the things that I was actually holding on to, which, to your point there, Lawrence, maybe going all the way back to 2008, when I was first had that thought, I wasn't really clear about the things that I was holding on to. And it was only those years later, as I get kind of clearer and more familiar with where the entangling is happening, that actually I can see what I'm holding on to. So then actually the idea of letting go, the idea of kind of ending, is kind of clearer, because it was clearer what I was holding on to.
Are you able to describe a bit what those things were for you?
Yeah, the things that I was holding on to. I think holding on to feelings of security, holding on to stories of success. I think a lot of it, also, you're talking there about the importance of sort of story. I think I was holding, you know, for all of my working life up until that point, I had sort of defined myself by being an entrepreneur, by creating companies. And so I think I was really holding on to, you know, a feeling of security, a feeling of accomplishment, a feeling of success that came from being able to say, oh, I'm the managing director of this company and look, it is successful. So, you know, a lot of the kind of self-worth and safety and identity coming from what I saw as being those kind of external measures. So I was holding on to the familiarity of those things, holding on to the security of those things. It's like, for sure, those things don't evaporate and those things don't go away. But more often than not, I have a bit of space around, you know, that kind of sort of space between the somebody asking the question and the kind of feeling of anxiety that would come up around it. And so those things don't go away. I just have some space from the kind of tightness of that feeling.
So you talk, the way I understood, there's like a 10-year... I'm not going to call it a
strategy.
Yeah, gap between when you started, when you realized more or less that your job was done, to when you're like, all right, I'm going to shift, make something happen. Do you think there was any way to shorten that time? Or do you think you needed those 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, like we were talking about the seven, it was actually another 7 years from when I first had that thought, it was 7 years later, actually, where I finally said in a sort of absolutely definitive way to my business partner, no, I'm leaving. I'm going to go. And in the same kind of reference to your, the kind of commitment thing you were sort of saying before, actually in saying that, and I will answer your question in a second, I was just reminded of this, as you were saying. So I basically get to a point and I say to my business partner, no, I'm done here. I'm not going to do this. And it was sort of actually around about this time of year. And I said to him, and I can't remember, I picked a date, right? It was something like June the 30th, the next year. So by June the 30th, I'm going to have left. And so bear in mind, I sort of ran the company. So if I was not there, it was definitely going to have an impact. But by June the 30th, I'm going to have left. And so either we've worked out by that point what's going to happen with the company, or I'm gone and we'll just have to deal with whatever that would be. So that was actually 7 years. That the committing to that then created a situation which meant that it rumbled on for another couple of years, which is a slightly different point, although there was clear exit by that point. But coming back to your thing around, could it have been made shorter? Could it have been sort of expedited? Kind of in a way, I don't think it could have done, in the same way as I don't think the kind of period of sort of a struggle after I left equally couldn't have been made any shorter too. And it's kind of like, in a way, certainly for me, it felt like these things are kind of running at their own speed a little bit. And in a way, I'm just the passenger who's being trundled along as it runs at its own speed. So I'm not really sure, you know, like I would have been like you guys, I'm not, you know, I was kind of always reading, lots of speaking to people, working on myself, working with other coaches, or I mean, all of those things I was kind of doing, you know, practicing all sorts of things. And it took the time that it took. So I don't know that actually that I don't know what I might have done that would have expedited it, or if it just was that's the amount of time it took for the wheel to spin and I was sort of dragged along on that journey as it went.
Because what springs to mind for me is like what's having a clear idea of an alternative. And yesterday I met up with a few people from our community. We had our Christmas little do on Wednesday. Unfortunately, you couldn't make it. Lots of Bogan bingo and non-PC proclamations. But the next day I was talking to Tom Nixon, and he had this little kind of procrastination toolkit that he'd created, never shared, which I found fascinating.
Holding him back from sharing it?
Exactly. Meta or what? There was something about that model that sprang to mind, or his way of attacking it. It's like, there's this thing that you want to do, for whatever reason, you don't do it. And what's tied to it is like there's a fear around it. And so you've got to like face that fear, absorb it, or sorry, just like sit with it. And then through that, what's the next simple step? And so the way I'm relating it to this is like, I'm not happy here. I need to do something else, but I don't know what it is, because there's a fear of I have no idea what I'm going to do next. And like, if I leave, suddenly what happens? And like, there's this fear about that. And so when I say like, oh, 7 years could have been shorter, like if someone had come to you and said, painted a picture of possibility of saying, actually, Ben, I really know you well. I know what you read about. I know what you like, fascinate. Could you imagine yourself doing this? And you'd be doing this, this, you'd be paid for that. You'd be running this, you'd be traveling there. And that's what you could be doing. If someone had painted that picture for you, do you think that could have shifted this idea like, oh, gosh, maybe I can accelerate this process?
Well, obviously, I don't know. But I mean, I think what I'd say is, in a way, can anybody ever paint that picture for you? Mm. Or do you need to paint that picture yourself?
Or could someone have helped you, accelerated the process of you coming up with it for yourself, maybe is a better way of thinking about it.
Because I ask that because I wonder that for myself, in the sense of like, I'm thinking of Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey. And also I'm trying to relate it to some of the work that we do around this kind of the story of change. So with the Hero's Journey, there's a call to adventure. There's that thing of like, actually, you should go off on this direction. And it's like, oh, fuck that. It's just like, no, or you follow it. Or what we talk about is the inciting incident, the thing that's like, oh, my God, this has happened and I need to do something about it. There's the motivation to change. And so on one hand, the motivation could be I'm just uncomfortable where I am, or that place looks amazing over there. I want to go there. And so there's something around here I was wondering about for someone who's like, need to change. I don't know what that is. How they can create, and I'm thinking about myself. So like one of the, you know, the inciting incident in my case was at Lawrence. You know, Lawrence, I want to do this thing. It's great. And, you know, I don't know what it is, but it's great. You know, we'll be good. Go, go, go. So like, like, and at the time, I didn't have any alternative to say, all right, no, this should be the way, because the agency way wasn't. I couldn't sell that even to myself. What's more, Lawrence. So there's something around how this being open to these calls to adventure, these inciting incidents that could help, might even destabilize a bit and make you feel uncomfortable, but also there's an opportunity there to start painting a picture of possibility.
Well, the other thing that comes to mind is, I guess you were meeting lots of other entrepreneurs, but being exposed to people who've maybe one step ahead in terms of making a move like that, or painting that picture of possibility, not through your vision, but through seeing what they've done.
Yeah. And I think probably part of what happens, like will happen for me, and I'm sure happens for lots of people, part of the community, is that on some level to greater degrees of consciousness, they know they want to make that change. They start looking for the communities. They start looking to surround themselves with people who are also on that kind of journey somewhat too. And I know there's kind of, you know, there are many sort of models of change, theories of change, aren't there? But one of the ones that was coming up as you were talking there is the idea that actually, you know, we make the change when the cost of remaining the same exceeds the cost of training. And at some point, there's like, what are the things that happen to be sort of really sort of stoking that up a little bit? And part of that for sure has to be about, you know, being in a place where you sort of envisage something new. And the more you are a kind of, I guess, the more you are sort of immersed in and surrounded by people who are on that sort of journey. And, you know, there are people further along and there are people closer to where you are in that kind of mix. That's all the stimulus, isn't it? That's all the sort of source material.
I quite like that. I'm thinking about the cost of not doing anything. It kind of connects back to some of the happy pricing stuff that we talk about. Mm. So on one level, I feel like we are talking a quite emotional, existential life journey aspect. But I just wanted to also just connect it to a very pragmatic, practical thing about what are you willing to invest in something. So like if you're going to spend money on a coach or an experience, it's like, what's the cost of not doing it? And if you can't, if someone can't paint a picture of the value you'll get, or if you can't educate yourself to say, all right, the cost of not doing it is so much more than the cost of doing it. If you can't do that, then you won't make the decision, you won't take the opportunity. So I think that's where I'm connecting to this idea of selling, even selling an idea, selling a vision, selling a picture of the future. While I'm acknowledging what Leah says, is she's not sure if someone can accelerate a process of change for us. While we can't necessarily push people faster than they can go, if that person is so stuck in their heads or so stuck in their worlds that they can't look up, we can encourage people to look up and to see other alternatives. And I think about the events that we run, the experiences we run, the experiences we've been on, you know, going to the Do lectures, for instance, and just meeting people who are just doing things differently. Like, I think if we're in this filter bubble of 9 to 5, 5 days a week, retirement, death, like, okay, that's all that's possible. So why would I ever think about anything else? As opposed to then going to sit in a field or talk to someone who just gives you a whole new vision of actually what people are doing in the world.
It's actually reminding me, one of the things I've really enjoyed when, before summer camp, reading the material you put, saying to kind of to the kind of information pack for speakers, so talking, and you referenced earlier, Carlos, and the thing about just make it about, make it as much about your experience as possible, and then people take from it kind of what they do. And I was thinking that there's a good friend of mine, and he also has been running his company for a long time. And he said to me probably on three different occasions, completely different contexts, that it was actually a good few years apart, that he would, you know, really that he would like to be doing something else. And I've never really sort of pushed it with him in any way, but I think kind of just sort of acknowledging what kind of Leah's saying, the conversation that we're sort of having there, in a way, actually, I guess all we can really do, or what we can most usefully do, is be sharing our own sort of stories of what we've done. And at the point when, say, the friend of mine is really ready to kind of hear that, he will basically look and see, okay, there are people who have kind of, who have gone before. There are people who are doing this, of course. And so, but at the point at which he's ready to hear that, I guess, which it links in some form, at the point at which the cost of remaining the same is just too great.
And I think that's an important point, because if I think about why you would end something when you haven't got something to go to, or even a story of that future, I think of actually Marianne is a good example. Serena, who was on this podcast recently. Even myself, my first ever and only full-time job. The experience was so bad that anything was better. And so the energy levels draining, this feeling of just dreading getting up in the morning. I'm not saying that was the same for them too, but I know they both walked away from what seemed like a great job to create space for nothing. And that for me is a big part of this, is like you said, when the cost of doing nothing is actually more painful than closing something or ending something.
One thing I wanted to relate to, or this I feel is connected, is when myself and Lawrence were running the agency, for a good while, I felt we just wanted to do it our own way, or, you know, we weren't looking outwards as much. We were very looking inwards into our, you know, how can we make this happen? How can we find the solutions? As opposed to when you are, I think this is also part of, you know, early agency of life. You're like on this treadmill of just trying to get the next client, do the work for this client, not giving ourselves enough time and space to just explore other places and other ways of looking at how work could work. And only through that, you're talking about the stories and the sharing stories, hearing other people's journeys and hearing that it's possible, and also hearing that it's a struggle as well. I think is it is why we can't push people faster than they can go. I think I kind of feel this kind of responsibility to at least share as many stories as possible so that they're out there in the world, so that people can somehow mistakenly come across it, or someone refers something. But then I think of, even from a neuroscience perspective, this idea of we perceive what we believe. We are looking through the world through our own set of filter goggles that are created by the people around us. So if we live in a group or with people who only see the world in one way, then we will believe the same things that they believe. And we only see the opportunities that they see, as opposed to this call to adventure, this breakout, this thing tonight. Let's try something different. Let's have a look in a different way. And I think I'm guessing that a lot of people who've been in our community and maybe listening to this, they've had a time in their lives where someone said, try this thing. It's totally left field that you never thought you'd try or see or write. And it's suddenly just opened your eyes to something different. And then you followed that path and it's taken you away from where you could have been going.
Yeah, there was something about hearing that at that point which resonated in such a way that meant, mm-hmm. you know, unlike the sort of tsunami of other sort of books, things you might have kind of, you know, read, listened to, there was something about that message at that point mm-hmm. that have resonated in such a way as like, no, that I am doing something. Or it is a kind of pointed bit of, you know, somebody says something which encourages you to actually do something else, you know, which are those kind of teachers which do pop up. You know, which I know all comes back a little bit, that is often seen within the context, say, of the hero's journey thing, that we do, you know, teachers do appear in our lives at points with a pointer that way or an instruction to go that way. And of course, I guess they turn up in lots of times. Sometimes we hear and see them, and sometimes we don't.
We've got a few questions. I wonder if you want to look at those.
Sure. Yeah, we had, well, the first one that I posted, maybe we can tackle it briefly. This is Marianne. I asked, Marianne was going to join us, and she has basically done this whole thing, stopped everything, tried to start a new thing. And so she asked, how do you manage the gap between destruction and new beginnings? Because I get it isn't instant when you create the space that new things will take, and that new things will take time to emerge. But maybe the only way to do it is with a financial buffer of several months.
But it also links a bit to Joel's story. Joel shared a bit in the chat, and I met up with him a couple of weeks ago. He's just left his company after 13 years and doesn't have a clear vision of what he's doing next. So is in that liminal space. Mm-hmm. I think he said himself, he does have a bit of time to explore what that is. But yeah, not everyone obviously has that luxury. So it's an interesting one, isn't it? So Marianne's, to give some context, is a copywriter, right? And so she gets paid to do copywriting, freelance copywriting. But I think for a long time has wanted to try something new and maybe find a bit more of a creative path.
So I think one, you know, speaking to one of the questions I posed before, it's like, what stops us from making change? And so again, we're making a lot of assumptions about what Marianne's situation is, and she isn't here to explain a bit more. So take this not as a...
we can say what we like.
Yeah, exactly. We're not addressing Marianne's situation in particular, but just talking in general. And I think the generality I was going to talk about was financial buffer.
Mm.
And this how... Yes, we need to stop things in order to create space and energy and time. But if we create all that space and then it suddenly gets filled in with money worries, what does that mean for our creativity?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no getting away from the fact we live in a world where money is pretty fucking important. So we sort of need it to be able to wander through it. So, you know, for sure, there has to be, or trying to create some way where you do have some kind of financial buffer to help you work through it, I think has to kind of help on the one hand. But equally, I guess the change that you guys went on kind of spoke to doing that in a sort of slightly different way. I think for me personally, so I did have a financial buffer. So I was extremely lucky in that regard. And also I kind of have a confidence around work and money because I'd always created and run my own company. So I knew I had kind of history of being able to kind of create sort of work for money opportunities. And so for me, the kind of transition was kind of harder, sort of less because I was more fortunate on the money side. I knew I had a bit of a buffer. It was all on the kind of the trouble and the trauma was all on the kind of emotional side, really, was the kind of shifting identity, all of those sorts of things. That's where I kind of really got sort of wrapped up. And that then does start bleeding into the kind of money thing a little bit too. But yeah, I think for me, you know, I was fortunate I had the buffer, and I think I needed the buffer to be able to kind of go naked, to go back to what we were talking about at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, you would have 6 months, a year buffer. That would be amazing. But not everyone has that luxury. So the interesting thing about that is, you know, I know lots of people, and I think we probably got there ourselves, where you have that pot and it starts to dwindle, and then it's only when it gets to crunch point,
right,
after however long that is, mm-hmm, 1 year, 6 months, or 2 years. You know, you have an element of play because you've got the buffer, and then suddenly it's like, whether it's redundancy money or money you've saved up, at some point you really have to start
need to make
money. So I always find it interesting, you know, when there's a need, actually you have to price more powerfully, or think about charging for something that maybe you weren't charging much for, if anything. But like you said, that also comes with anxiety of like, I have to charge this way, I have to bring in more money. And so that can create anxiety, it can create lack of creativity, and it can also come across as being desperate, because you might talk about it in a way that you're really feeling that scarcity. So personally, I mean, I'm a fan of, like we did, you know, whether it works for people or not, but just to create some income that might not take you 5 days a week, but that you can at least bring in something to at least stop the pot dwindling rapidly. And also just to have that feeling of, I'm making money. I'm not seeing, even if you had £1 million in the bank and you're losing it, there'll be a feeling of scarcity because that number's getting smaller. So it's not about an amount of money. I think it's more a feeling of creating value, creating wealth. And sometimes it can focus the mind, because it might be that people are creating something new, but they've got 20 years of experience behind them in another field, which they can bring to that. And just because they're putting on a new hat doesn't mean they can't charge from day one. So in some ways it's trying to get people thinking more creatively about money as well as the thing they're creating.
Yeah, and the confidence that comes to what you're saying there, the confidence that comes from, I'm trying a new thing, I'm doing a new thing, and I'm exchanging this in some form for somebody else's money, you know, that somebody's buying this from me, even if it's a sort of small thing. Then they're kind of, these are kind of points of encouragement, aren't they? It's a kind of an invitation to keep going, an invitation to explore a little bit further. And so to kind of to use that as a kind of lead to respond to follow.
And sorry, it's a good example of that. I met someone a weeks ago who's an accredited coach, but she's got another job. And so she's got a security coming from the job, but she wants to become a full-time coach. And she's offering sessions at £15 an hour to coach people, even though she's very good at it and got a lot of experience. And the reason she's doing it is because she can afford to. But my argument was, well, that sends out a message that, you know, we pay a cleaner that amount of money. So it's an interesting thing of, when you don't need it, then you devalue your worth in some ways, but then when you do need it, it's really hard to then suddenly jump your prices up by tenfold to start charging what you need.
I wanted to like really just acknowledge that one premise is that you won't have the creative space to do these new things unless you stop some of the things that you're doing at the moment, and it requires a bit of a mindset shift if you're not inclined or you haven't had the experience of getting paid for stuff that you've created, that you're not, basically you're direct to the customer and you're not being paid through employment, one word term. And then there's some aspects around your relationship to money that we're talking about that also needs to be taken into account. And so there's deeper work other than just learning how to build a business when it comes to this transition that we're talking about here. And it's something that we experience a lot through the people we work with in terms of their experience of this journey. There's like, we talked about, you paint a picture of possibility. What could it be like? What would it look like? Does that look attractive? Is that what you want? And then there's actually doing it. And with us, speaking now from our own perspective, what I remember is that while we didn't have like a specific business model for the whole of the Happy Startup School, we were selling events. We were selling experience. There was something that we were actually selling at the time. So there was a potential for money to come in. We also had the opportunity to sell memberships. You know, there's this idea that there was income that was coming in and that we were already trying to pull in at the time. It wasn't easy, for me at least, and it felt anxiety-inducing because it wasn't never certain. There's always a level of uncertainty in that. But then that, for me, was realizing that's just par for the course. And it wasn't about you will ever find a predictable, scalable business model that you can 100% rely on. There was some inner work around what is it that I'm scared of here? And how do I make myself more resilient in that situation? And so, you know, just talking to Marianne, yes, I think it's important to have that buffer and to feel that you have the ability to get money for the things that you need in the way you want to do it. And that's the work, I think. That's part of what I believe all of us are trying to help people with here. We have a couple of minutes left, so just let's see if we can look at another question here. What does ending things mean in detail? Wake up and finish things proactively, or is there a period of time for decision making and you're more likely to plan the end?
I mean, I guess in a way, so I sort of, some things in some sort of areas of life, like definitely do things quite sort of intuitively. And actually, we're having this conversation the other day, Carson, we were talking about a friend of mine and sort of running restaurants, and like he was in, you know, very kind of difficult place to be running restaurants in this kind of current climate. You know, prices of food going up is incredibly, incredibly difficult. And, you know, he was talking about the, you know, his kind of his energy reserves, his kind of tank of energy getting more and more depleted. So his ability to kind of turn up creatively, turn up enthusiastically, all of these sorts of things. And the sort of conversation that was coming up, that was the need for him to kind of make a change. And so then actually the point, actually maybe an invitation to end things in this context is going to be a kind of useful energizer. It is going to be a thing which replenishes the tank a little bit and is a spark. And so in that sense, I think it's, you know, what does ending things in kind of detail mean? In his instance, or and then in mine, in a sort of slightly different kind of, you know, being really kind of clear, what is being able to kind of identify, like in his case, maybe it's kind of something that they are serving, a particular part of what they're offering. In my case, it was a whole business, but being able to kind of identify that thing, kind of put it up on a sort of put it on the table almost, and go, right, I'm kind of clear. This is the object. This is the service. This is the product. This is the idea that I'm kind of wanting to end, and then kind of making a commitment to head in a different direction. So I think maybe it kind of links back a little bit, you know, can I identify it? As a lawyer might say, can I drop it on my foot? You know, when I'm sort of really clear around that sort of thing, then sort of going through a process for myself, which is why I think it does come back to a kind of an intuitive thing. What is it about this idea that I'm really holding on to, going back to the thing I was talking about before? And when I'm really kind of clear about the thing that I'm kind of holding on to, then I get a little bit of space from it, which allows me to head in a new direction. So I think that in my own sense, and in kind of work that I do with other people, it sort of turns up in that way. But it is quite an intuitive thing that does involve kind of recognizing what I'm actually holding on to, does also then involve starting to kind of plot a path somewhere else. Actually, one of the other things that just quickly come into my mind as we were talking about, I know the Satir process of change that you guys sort of talk about a lot, that for me, and when I did 2020, for example, which was also a big part of my own sort of journey away from all of this, in a way, you know, what does the kind of ending things in detail mean, or what does that kind of period, you know, beyond that? Well, the thing that I found when I was in the kind of period beyond that was that I needed to be kind of doing things, creating things, making things as part of my journey away, as part of my journey onto something new. And the thing that I found when I was in more of the kind of real sort of, you know, complex kind of chaos phase, that I was only really able to kind of create sort of small things that would be quite easily digestible, both by me and by other people. And as I got more and more confident and had more space around that process of change, the projects that I was trying to birth, for want of a better phrase, the projects that I was trying to put out there became a bit bigger. They became a bit kind of larger. And that was also then reflected in the commitment that I was asking other people to make too. So what started as like a small little kind of bite-sized kind of offering became slightly larger, became a bigger meal, became a kind of feast, to kind of extend the kind of metaphor on. And so in that sense, kind of the ending was about being really clear, as making it as tangible as possible, what is the thing that I wanted to end, understanding how I was hanging on to that, understanding what I was really sort of attaching to get some space from that, making a commitment to head in a different direction and vocalizing and verbalizing that commitment for others to see and hear as well. And then being very deliberately on a path which was heading in a new direction, which then comes with it, its own sort of process of how to kind of move beyond and how to kind of grow in confidence on what is a new route.
For me, there's so much of this is storytelling. I keep coming back to it because I think it's just, when we have stories, it makes it easier for us to get our heads around what we're trying to do. And even if that story's, I'm starting with this small bite-sized thing. But it does make me think that it's someone in maybe Marianne's position just starting small things and trying and experimenting and seeing what fits, what works, what feels good, and maybe what sells. Because I think a lot of people can think of their big vision and then it has to be a big start, and that just pushes feedback further away and makes the whole thing feel scarier, or it's either success or failure. It's very binary. So yeah, trying to hold on to that sense of play, I think, is the skill here, even if it's, like you said, hard to navigate mentally, emotionally.
We'll talk to two things that we do within our community that maybe you've interest, Andreas. Firstly, I was going to rephrase, what does ending things mean in detail? Rather than thinking of ending things, what does changing things mean? And that's, for me, the core of it. It's like, it's not just dropping something, it's dropping something for something else. There's, like, talking to Ben, what Ben was saying, referring to the story of change that we talk about, what is currently happening now that isn't pleasant, that you don't like? You know, what is the situation that you are in the moment that isn't working for you? And then there's what is, and this is the hard bit, I think, for a lot of people, what is the new situation look like? What does that have to be? And so there's being able to plot that out in some way, at least as of a fashion to begin with. So that's step one. And then the other thing is then to surround yourselves with people who can help you get clear. Not only clear about what the future could be, but also clear about what you can do in the moment and what might be getting in your way. What do you need to unlearn as well as learn in order to get to where you want to get to? And it's that either you're not clear about where you want to get to, or you've got too many options about what to do next, which is the kind of the situation I think most people find themselves in. If you can get help with that, with people that you actually trust and value their opinion, and also have enough diverse thought around them rather than it just being kind of a groupthink perspective. I think if you can get that, then that would be part of this. Do it. What does it mean to end things in detail? A couple of, you know, simple but not necessarily easy steps there. Okay. Thank you very much for listening to us over this time. Ben, any final reflections you want to share with people?
No, just thanks. Thanks. You know, actually, for me, actually giving the talk at Summer Camp was a sort of important part of my own journey of kind of changing ending. So I was really appreciative of the opportunity to do that. Appreciative of the opportunity to kind of share and talk today. So, and nothing to add other than thank you.
Lawrence?
Yeah, likewise. I think it's always good just to revisit this topic, really. I think it's, I'm guilty as anyone of starting things and forgetting to close them, or just accruing more stuff and making things more complex than they need to be. So it's almost like a lifetime skill to be reminded that, we need to create more space in our lives, really. I think this is such an important topic for that reason.
Yeah, I think that I'm going to hook onto that is the habitual busyness that I find myself falling into and this need to occupy myself. So another aspect then, I think, for Andreas, well, that's coming up for me when you saw, you know, how, what does it mean to make change? What was the details of that? I think just doing nothing now and again. And really, for me, not on just doing nothing, thinking nothing.
Good luck with that.
Well, I was about to say,
yeah.
Dalai Lama still struggles.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I was trying it this morning, actually, and what I meant with my thinking nothing, like, I'm going to just slice this bread. I'm not going to be thinking about what the call is this morning. I'm not going to be thinking about why did I forget to put the dishwasher on last night. I'm just going to slice the bread.
But you were doing something.
I was doing something, but I hopefully wasn't thinking about too many things.
Okay, I'm going to go and slice some bread now.
All right. Enjoy bread slicing wherever you are. Thank you very much. And we'll
thanks, everyone.
Next
week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Happy Entrepreneur Podcast. To hear more inspiring conversations like this, follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search for The Happy Entrepreneur. In March, we'll be launching Tribe 7 of our Vision 2020 program. If you're at a point in your career or entrepreneurial journey where you're asking yourself, what next? And you need the clarity and confidence to make some bold decisions about a new direction, then this program is for you. We'll help you define what success really means to you, understand the impact that is yours to make, make sure your mission is both energetically and financially sustainable, and also learn how to build a supportive community around yourself. We want people who are driven to do good in the world and are tired of trying to do it on their own. We'll share the key lessons we've learned while building the Happy Startup School and pivoting from the stressful peaks and troughs of agency life to a life of freedom, adventure, service, and connection. We value learning, play, and friendship, and we'd like to help you discover the values and the work that align more to who you are. Don't struggle alone, and don't get sidetracked by other people's measures of success. Discover for yourself what it means to create effortless impact. To apply for the next tribe, go to vision.happystartups.co. We look forward to hearing from you.